This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
It's going super well. It's great to see you. Well, I really wanted you on. I for everybody who's joining, for all 6,500 of you, Lisa is a friend. We had a great dinner with her very handsome husband a couple of years ago, and I remember just saying anything I could ever do for you. I just, you know, fell in love with our friendship, and a couple months ago she said, hey, book time for me, and I said, absolutely, let's do a live. I really want my community to know what you're up to. And so here she is. Please, you know, I've got to run to a client meeting soon, so we're going to spend 10, 15 minutes here. But Lise, I would love for you to tell everybody who you are, what the name of the book is, what it's about, and I'll ask some questions.
Oh my God, thank you so much. Yes, so I'm Lisa Biyu, co-founder of Quest Nutrition and co-founder and president of Impact Theory. And I have my own show, Women of Impact, and now author of Radical Confidence. And Gary, I've got pretty much a whole chapter where I talk about you.
You're very sweet, is that right?
Yes, so here's the thing, because everyone sees Radical Confidence, they're like, oh, so you're teaching people how to be confident. And I'm like, no, it's the opposite. I'm teaching people how to show up even when they don't have the confidence, even when they're scared, and they're like, they don't have confidence in their abilities. How on earth do you keep showing up? People think it's because I'm confident, Gary, but it's not. It's because I do it anyway. I just keep moving forward. And so an example I give is you had an event right before COVID. I think it was like 2019. And it was like you happened to an event at CES. And you invited both me and Tom. And I don't know if you remember this. And Tom was like, oh, I'm so sorry, I can't be there. He had like a speaking gig. But I was like, I really want to go. And this is when we kind of first.
Yep.
So I was like, do I have the right to like email Gary V back and ask if I can come to his event? And so I talk about the book on like when you feel like the imposter, like when you have the imposter syndrome, when you don't feel great, when you think like, who am I to email Gary V? But I still did it. And how do we overcome that negative voice in our head that's telling us that we are an imposter, that we don't have the, you know, the right to step out of our comfort zone or step out of the zone that we put ourselves in. And so I really do break this whole thing down of how I then emailed you and I was like, for 2 days, I was waiting for you to reply. And I literally coached myself through, what would I do if you said no? And so in the book, I literally say, like, how do you handle the word no? And do you let it define who you are? Do you let it dictate how you show up every day? Or do you see it as a possibility that maybe it's not yet, or maybe it's a not that right person, but not that it's a reflection of who you are as a person and what you can actually accomplish? And so as I'm sitting there waiting for you to reply, I'm like, okay, I really hope he says yes. And I say, like, you didn't write the two letters, you wrote the two words, of course. And that was the moment that, I mean, look, I think all your fans and everyone knows who you are. You're so freaking genuine. You show up to be the person you really say you are. But, like, that was one of those moments where I was like, wow, you really did show up. And then, Gary, though, the entire thing, I spent another 20 pages talking people through how on earth I flew to Vegas and went to your event. Because I was so, I had the imposter syndrome. How am I going to go to a Gary Vee's event? You're so huge. You're so busy. You're so busy.
Please, do. I'm sorry to interrupt because I want to help the people on this call.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think is happening with the like the concept of confidence, insecurity, imposter syndrome? Why do you go into, or if you don't in the book, do you as a person, why are so many people brought up to overvalue other people's opinions on their self-worth? In a world where practically they understand that people don't really know them, right? I'm looking at Dustin right now. He's 37, he looks 25. Right? Dustin and I, you know, like we traveled the other day, he's starting to like do some of the stuff D-Rock does. We're getting very close. I don't know 96% of Dustin. I got a ton of feelings on my intuition. We have a great connection even, but like, I logically understand, I've got some nuances, we've talked, but like really, really? Like even your own siblings, even your best friends don't know every part. Why are humans so capable of overvaluing a stranger's opinion of them and not realizing it's a reflection on that. If I was to not answer that email, I could live with that story. Like if you said it publicly, I'd be like ashamed and sad and disappointed, but I would know that fuck, classic my reality, right? Thousands of emails, thousands of DMs. What if I was training a new admin and by accident they archived it? There's like, I can live with that, even though it might, you know, even though you might have had a different story and blasted me for it or other people do. What I couldn't live with is the concept of me seeing it and saying no. That doesn't represent my values. But I always wonder when people have things, I always, you know what I'm scared of? I'm always scared that I'm in a crowded area and somebody says something to me, but I don't hear it. And that person thinks that I'm avoiding them. Maybe they think I look, you know, when you have 60 people at a conference and they might think I looked at them, but I'm actually looking at the person behind them and they said something and I didn't hear it. Like I'm always worried about that, which is why I'm so in tune. But why do people overvalue other? Fuck me. Who gives a shit about me if I don't say what? Like, why is that?
God, there's so many things there. So number one, I think, is people look up to you. And so they have a feeling of who you are. And because there's so many thousands of people around you, if you make eye contact with me, Gary, now I feel like that connection one-on-one. So you've made me feel good.
That I understand.
And so there's so much power, right, with that. But let's face it, we all think way more than we really should about the situation because we're in our own freaking heads. Like, we all know the phrase hangry. Like, just by me not eating, I could be angry. So now take that on a scale and amplify that by 10,000, which is where you are. You're freaking busy. How do I know you're not hungry? Tired. So many people around you. So many decisions. And so the truth is, I actually can't influence how other people are going to feel. Like, I get it. And I know because you've got such a pure heart, you don't want that person to perceive it as a negative. But ultimately, you can't control that, right? All you can control is how you show up in your authenticity. And if you genuinely mean kind, gracious things to people, people will see that. And there are going to be times I have just accepted that hangry is a real thing. And there's going to be moments that someone's going to say something to me. I'm going to be accidentally hangry and I may say something. So I know in my heart, I didn't actually, you know, like have any ill will. But let's
well,
say that
you
it, because of where they are in their life.
You brought up something super big to me, which is when people are not nice to me, my default isn't I suck. My default is, are they okay?
Mm-hmm.
Where does compassion fit into relationship with one's confidence? Because I feel like I use compassion as a teammate to my own self-esteem, not as a coping mechanism, but as a truth of human behavior.
So much, so true. And it was the fact that I had so much compassion that even if you had said no to me, I actually had already processed it. So before I sent it, I said, what does no mean to me? Because the big thing is, Gary, I can get so taken away with my emotions, right? If I feel badly about myself, I can wallow in it. So to make sure that I don't get there, right, the antidote of that is to process before I even do
it. Is there a level, I apologize, is there a level of detachment from the results that is needed? I mean, because that's what works for me. No, literally nothing I do in life is based on the thing. I don't play a game for the trophy. I play the game because I love the game.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. Like, the success isn't guaranteed. The results aren't actually guaranteed. The only thing that is guaranteed is the path you're walking right now to get there. And so me knowing that you could possibly say no, how do I process it before I get there so that it doesn't derail me from the path that I'm on? Because the key is, Gary, is that if you had said no, it wouldn't have deterred me.
Of course.
Like, it taught me an amazing lesson, but I had to process. Now,
and Lisa, back to that as well, I also think people are too transaction to transaction. I would never make a judgment on someone based on three, let alone one, micro interactions. There's so many people that fully make a judgment on a human being on one interaction, which is shattering to me. I mean, we have become addicted with the speed to judgment on one's entire character off a micro moment.
So true, because I think also you even said earlier, the validation piece, we all look outside ourselves or often to get the validation, to get the pats on the back. I did that. I was a stay-at-home wife for 8 years. I supported Tom behind the scenes. I cooked, I cleaned for him. And that was my day-to-day job. And the validation I was getting was being the most amazing supportive wife. Everyone in my grief community was giving me accolades and pats on the back. But that is those pats on the back, the validation I was getting from external was exactly what kept me stuck for 8 years.
I get it. I get it. I get it. Who do you think will, you know, which micro segmentations of people do you think will get the most value out of the book?
To be honest, I think anyone, and I don't want to be broad, but it's kind of broad, anyone that isn't living the life they want. I spent 8 years there stuck. It's what I call purgatory the mundane. I didn't hit rock bottom. My mind, my life is just mundane enough, which is exactly what I'm stuck in the purgatory of it. Mm-hmm. How many of us, Gary, how many people have you interviewed? Incredible humans that did amazing things, but because they hit rock bottom, what happens if you don't hit rock bottom? That was me. I was just fine.
Right. The you know, it's so funny. I've been thinking a ton about a video. I almost made it just now, but I got pulled to something. I want to make, I literally thought of it, the clarity of it today, which is, regret is way worse than losing, and people are choosing to live with regret because they don't want to take the chance to do something because they might lose in front of others. So people are not doing things in their lives because they're scared to lose in front of others. Instead, they're going to lose with themselves and have nothing but poisonous regret in their older age. And I that message matters to me heavily.
Yeah, it's something I write in the book called No Bullshit, What Would It Take? And Tom and I play this game all the time. We played this when we started Quest and we put our house up for collateral. We did this when we started Impact Theory. It's No Bullshit, What Would It Take? So set your goal and then play the game No Bullshit, What Would It Actually Take to Get There? And then you decide if you actually want to get there or not. So that, to your point, Gary, there's no regrets. Because that's the point, is that, oh, I should have done that back in the day. Well, if you play the game, if you've assessed what it's going to take to get your goal, and you decide you're not going to do it, then you don't have the regret because you did it with total clarity.
Which, actually, for all the inspiring content creators and authors on here, what was the most surprising part of doing this book?
Well, the most surprising part. So the first, so Tom came to me, he'd heard from an agent, they suggested if I wanted to write the book. So Tom came to me, he's like, babe, like, I can't believe you've got this offer. The very first words out of my mouth, and this is after we built Quest, the billion-dollar company, this is after we built Impact Theory that has over half a billion views on our content. The very first words out of my mouth, Gary, were, who would buy a book from me? And so that was almost the beauty in it, because I said, that insecure Lisa that was 14 that got bullied and teased for her looks and didn't believe in herself, she's still there. And the beauty is, it's okay. And that was actually part of the realization that we may never get over our insecurities, but with radical confidence, you sure as hell can use tools and show up anyway. So I think that was really powerful for me to kind of, as a reinforcement that insecurity is still in me. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, at some level, everyone has pockets of their life where they have insecurity and pockets where they are, you know, confident, you know? I mean, that's just the reality of it. Oh, shoot, hold on 1 second. Got it. All right, I've got to run. I held as long as I could.